You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn.
It certainly is, and in the studio this morning we've got Dr. Emma Carroll from the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Auckland, and we're talking about the tohora, or the southern right whale. Morena, Emma, how are you?
Atamarie, I'm great, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you up here. What a beautiful creature to be studying in your research. Tell us a wee bit about how you got interested in the tohora.
So yeah, tohora are amazing whales. They're a species I've been working on for about 15 years. I actually did my master's here working on them back in the day. And since then, I've been in a really lucky position to be able to build international collaboration so that we can really start to understand how this species is recovering from whaling and how climate change is impacting that recovery in different ways in different parts of the world.
Far out. I mean, they haven't really had a break, have they, the poor old right whale? They were obviously one of the big ones that were whaled, like the big ones, terrible pun to accidentally use when you're talking about whales, but they were obviously a very, very hunted species for a long time, and now with this whole new set of I guess potential existential threats for them, it must be quite a full-on research area to be diving into. You're doing some really interesting stuff though, which is looking at skin samples, and that is giving you enough information to perhaps see how climate change is impacting them. Can you tell us a wee bit about this?
Yeah, so I led a collaboration of dozens of researchers from all around the world, and we collected small skin samples. So what we do is we go out on a little boat, and often the boat is about a third the size of these whales, because they get up to 18 metres and 80 tonnes.
Far out.
And we fire a dart, and the tip of the dart hits the whale and pulls out a plug of skin about the same size as your fingernail.
Tiny then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so we take that back to our lab, and we're able to measure microchemical markers in that skin called stable isotopes. And you really are what you eat. These microchemical markers vary predictably through time and space.
Mm.
So what we can see is, well, this whale we sampled on its wintering grounds. I work in Mangahuka, the Auckland Islands.
Mm-hmm.
So if we sample a whale there, we can look back in time using those microchemical markers about 6 months.
Far out.
And say, whereabouts was that whale feeding 6 months ago?
That's so interesting. So what kind of stuff are you seeing through those microchemicals that tells you that?
So we were able to use these samples from not just New Zealand, Aotearoa, but also Australia, Argentina, South Africa and Brazil. And what we're able to look at is how their foraging grounds or feeding grounds have changed over the past 30 years, but also by comparing the foraging grounds from today with the whaling records, we could go back four centuries.
Far out.
So if we just think about the last 30 years, this is when climate change has really started impacting our world and our oceans, as we've seen over our past summer.
Yes, quote marks for summer for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And what we can see is feeding grounds are changing for these species, but it depends whereabouts in the Southern Ocean they are.
Yeah.
So if you look at the South Atlantic, we saw that the South African and Brazilian southern right whales were using those high latitude areas around Antarctica a lot less, and they were moving further north. Whereas if you looked at New Zealand and East Australia, there was actually a slight increase in using those areas around Antarctica. And when we think about the whole ecosystem, climate change is impacting the South Atlantic, particularly the Antarctic Peninsula, way more than other parts of the Southern Ocean. And weirdly enough, if you look at south of New Zealand, it's actually getting cooler.
Mm.
So what we see is these animals are changing how they're feeding in response to how those ecosystems are changing, which is really cool because these animals have traditions. So we know that females or mums will actually teach their calves where to go in their first year of life. Where should he go to get good kai mum? And they follow her, and then they'll follow her back to her favourite winter breeding calving ground. And so we were concerned, you know, given these traditions, can the whales respond? And so we're seeing over that 30-year period, actually they are changing their behaviours. And I mean, I think that's a really strong positive,
actually. I was going to say that this, I was sort of expecting we were going to have a conversation this morning that was really bleak about climate change and the right whale, which has had a very hard time of it historically and contemporarily. But this is actually sounding kind of like, you know, nature's awesome, you know? They sort of find a way. Obviously, it's not an excuse to carry on with the terrible climate polluting activities of the world, but it's really amazing to see how nature does respond to that change in climate.
Yeah, I mean, climate change is going to have winners and losers. You know, if you look at obligate or animals that have to use the ice, they're going to have a tougher time than something like a right whale, which can forage. So we know that they can feed 30 degrees south, so that's actually further north than Auckland, all the way to the ice edge. So they can, you know, as we're seeing, they can actually change their behaviour, which is really promising. However, you know, if things change too fast, we don't know how much they can cope.
Yeah, so this, you know, 30 years is still in a lot of ways a long time. There's the ability for gradual and generational change to happen in that way, perhaps, or not it's perhaps.
It's about one generation for a right whale.
Far out.
So it's showing that that they're able to change within their lifespan, which is cool. And so they're probably learning from each other, which I find really exciting.
Wow, that is amazing. Speaking of exciting things, I feel like we did gloss over the very cool part of your research, which is getting in a tiny boat and being right next to a right whale. What was that experience like?
Oh, they're amazing animals, honestly. They're like the ballerina. If you can imagine like a sumo wrestler being really good at ballet, that's kind of a right whale, because they're these huge animals, but they're incredibly agile. Wow. They can basically bend themselves in half and turn around and look at you. And
wow.
So they're really curious.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've had some really amazing experiences. Obviously, you have to respect the animal.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're just huge and curious. And so, unfortunately, you can see why they got hunted, because they probably came up to
check out the boats.
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on over here?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. What's next for you in your research, particularly in the right whale space?
So we looked at, the study was looking at things on a really broad scale. So we could actually look at which big zones of the ocean, so around Antarctica, around the mid-latitudes, subtropical convergence. But what we've actually got happening at the moment is we've got satellite tags on 25 tohora from New Zealand and about 5 from Australia. And what that allows us to have is migration routes, so how they're actually going to those feeding grounds.
Wow.
And then get a detailed picture of, you know, what are they doing on those feeding grounds? Are they using upwellings or, you know, differences in ocean temperature currents and things like that to feed? So we can actually get more detailed information on how they're using those regions of the ocean that are really important to them.
Far out. I mean, this is fascinating research. I can see why you've done 15 years on it. You could just keep going forever looking at these beautiful creatures. Thank you so much, Emma Carroll, for coming in and speaking with us this morning. There are some really cool articles about your research and about the tohora, which we'll link in the podcast after the show for anyone who wants to find out a little bit more about this morning. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
That was Ready, Steady, Learn. Thanks to the University of Auckland, the best university.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.